Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms. I live in London and report foreign affairs. In a moment, I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips in North Carolina. We get together every week to discuss world affairs. This week, among the topics on the agenda are the problems that Angela Merkel is having in Germany in forming a coalition. There's also the outstanding problem of Brexit. I hope you enjoy. Thanks very much indeed for listening.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world. This is, of course, Thanksgiving Eve. This portion of the program has, of course, been pre-recorded to both accommodate our sleeping requirements for our guest, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, but also this has been pre-recorded to accommodate activities here at the talk station, give us some time away from the microphone and the studio. But with that as backdrop, just to make a comment that as you hear this program, you may hear some stories that, well, due to the delay from when it was first created to now when you're hearing it, there may be some changes in the national scene, but hopefully not. Of course, our host, our editor, if you will, from LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio is always looking ahead. So let's hope that this is prescient and he's got it all settled in and ready to go for the week. And with that, Tom Arms of Look Ahead News with us this afternoon. Tom, good evening to you.
Good evening. Hold on just a second, Lockwood. I just want to take the cover off my crystal ball here.
Oh, okay. And dust it off, if you will, please.
Yep.
Very quickly, Tom. Two quick questions. One, of course, how's the weather there in London?
Oh, wet and miserable.
Oh, a typical London weather then, right?
No, not at all. More like typical Moorhead, North Carolina, I would say.
Oh, okay. Well, it's not that miserable here. We are
typical winter weather.
Typical winter weather. All right. And the next question, of course, we're looking at Thanksgiving. You, an expatriate, have... I've enjoyed Thanksgiving growing up here in the States. I'm curious, do you have or recognize Thanksgiving there in London, both personally and I'm just wondering culturally in the environs?
Well, other people, obviously the Brits don't. It was based on the old harvest festival, which came from Europe. In fact, most cultures and societies have a harvest festival. That was the root of it. And it just became distinctly American, partly because of the problems that the Pilgrims were having in their first couple of years, and partly because Abraham Lincoln made it a national holiday in the middle of the Civil War. And so it was something which could unite all Americans. But my family here, we do definitely celebrate it. My wife and I are both Americans. In fact, we probably celebrate more than my family did back in America. We have a huge banquet for 24 people.
Wow. I didn't remember getting the invitation. I guess the airplane is standing by ready to pick me up, I guess.
We're bringing you by rowboat.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
But we invite all of our British friends, and I stand up and give almost the same speech every year, which says... tells them the story of the Pilgrim Fathers and how they wanted to give thanks to the Indians who helped them. And I stand up and say, as people who've come the other way, we'd like to give thanks to the British people who helped us to settle here in the UK. I can tell you that an invitation to the Armses' Thanksgiving dinner is much sought after and fought over.
Wow. That's impressive. Will you be having turkey?
Yes, we have turkey and cranberry sauce. It's a traditional American Thanksgiving. I spent a week polishing the silver and cleaning the house and things like that. Well, we don't have it on Thanksgiving Day. Thursday's, it's not a public holiday here. And in fact, my wife is with our daughter in New York this Thanksgiving. So she wanted her mother over there for Thanksgiving. It just shows how important it is.
Wow.
So we're not having it until the 2nd of December.
Well,
but
I have ample,
it's still being sought after.
Well, I'll have ample time to get there. With that said, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, before we look ahead into issues of international concern, well, we will get to one of them. Curious about the coverage there in the European media related to President Trump's recent efforts to, well, quite frankly, free, I would use that term, three college basketball players who had the temerity to apparently and allegedly shoplift in China, a country that takes dim view of that kind of action. What's the coverage there? Is there any coverage in the UK and European press about that effort?
Yeah, I don't think it's alleged. I think they've admitted it. Yes, there was coverage, not a great deal of coverage. It was reported fairly straight. I think most of the coverage was focused on the fact that President Trump said, I hope they're going to thank me for this, which, of course, they did effusively. It was covered. It was covered once.
Okay.
And not in great detail.
All right. It's just high dudgeon here because one of the father of one of the players is critical of the president. It doesn't warrant conversation, but it is interesting. And of course, I personally am looking at it with kind of a jaundiced view. It's old news, and we're fortunate that he had good relationships with the Chinese premier, Xi Jinping. And as a result, we were able to extricate these three students who did something extremely stupid. But that's another time, a story for another time. Regarding President Trump and, of course, the Mideast, the East. Let's talk about North Korea and the president's recent observations and basically a chilling of a potential relationship with North Korea. I say a potential. I don't know that it ever had much of a chance. Is there much coverage of that in the United Kingdom and European press?
Do you mean chilling improving?
No, chilling as getting colder again.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. Not a great deal. They've just reported that he wants more sanctions. I'm trying to remember what the four. What was reported was that Australia is supporting him. I had meant to get around to the Foreign Office today to ask them. I'm almost certain that the Foreign Office here in the UK will also be supporting the new sanctions. That sounds, you know, as if they're pretty straightforward.
Okay. So,
again, it hasn't been reported in any great detail yet.
Okay. And then final question, because this has, of course, been a growing issue here in the States. And, of course, the issue of sexual harassment, the disclosures just recently of accusations against, well, renowned broadcaster Charlie Rose, who has himself been suddenly released from all of his broadcast responsibilities and relationships. How's that being covered there again in the European press, the UK? And are you having similar situations and accusations still flying there?
Charlie Rose got quite good coverage here. It's moving down the socioeconomic scale here now. We don't have any big names this week, but we have a lot of people who were ladies or women working in the Air Force or working in law who claim that they were sexually harassed as part of their jobs, and that they, in order to get ahead, they had to, you know, do certain things. And it was made very clear what they were. But there are no big film names. There's no big political names this week. That doesn't mean there won't be next week. But it's sort of moved down a bit, if you like, moved down a notch simply because there haven't been any big names, but a lot of everyday workaday people are coming out and claiming that they were sexually harassed and that, they're very keen on the Me Too Twitter tag.
Right. Very interesting here as well. The quick question for you, Tom, in light of the fact that, this is one of those issues that has a political as well as a cultural context associated with it. Is there a feeling there that this may quickly pan out, you know, play out, that it might just dissipate with time? Or is there a new awareness, if you will, publicly speaking?
It's difficult to tell. Most things have a shelf life in the news business, as you know.
Right.
But, you know, civil rights, women's rights, they've been in the headlines for a long time now. And so, you know, we can't, I don't think you can really say.
All right. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. Just to remind you, log on to LookAheadNews.com, become a subscriber. It's very easy to do. And, of course, listening to Look Ahead Radio, heard on this station and stations around the world. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World on the talk station, FM 107, AM 1240.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
This is Tom Arms of LookAhead.News.com's expanded world analysis for the week beginning the 27th of November. LookAhead broadcasts tomorrow's news today so that you can plan to participate. Brexit and cash dominates the British agenda next week. The government is trying to firm up its negotiating position before big EU summit in mid-December, at the same time deal with the aftermath of the recent budget speech. German support for Britain is a key element in Britain's Brexit strategy, but that support is suffering from Chancellor Angela Merkel's failure to form a coalition. She wants to call another election, but President Frank-Walter Steinmeier wants more coalition talks. In Paris, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development on Tuesday publishes its economic outlook for the second half of 2017. Its June report was generally rosy for all the developing countries except the UK. Pope Francis is immersing himself in the Rohingya crisis. He will be visiting both Myanmar and Bangladesh next week for talks with Myanmar and Bangladeshi government. 1 million Rohingyans have been forced to flee to Bangladesh. The Pope flies back to the Vatican on Saturday in time for Advent celebrations on Sunday. UN-sponsored Syrian peace talks resume in Geneva on Tuesday between the regime of President Assad and rebel forces. Israel is becoming increasingly worried about a growing rapprochement between Palestinian rival factions Hamas and Fatah. From next Friday, the two sides will start to share administrative control in Gaza. World oil production is on the agenda on Thursday at the biannual meeting of OPEC. The main discussion point is whether or not to extend production cuts or make even deeper ones in order to maintain oil prices. Oil prices have remained stable at between $50 and $60 a barrel for the past 6 months. In Kenya, Uhuru Kenyatta will be sworn in as president on Tuesday after two controversial elections. Kenyatta won both elections, but both were challenged in the Kenyan Supreme Court. The first was nullified and the second approved. Ivanka Trump, America's first daughter, will visit India on Tuesday to Thursday to co-host the Global Entrepreneurship Conference with Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi. Red carpet celebrations include a dinner in the world's largest dining hall. Back in Washington, Attorney General Jeff Sessions makes another appearance before the Congressional Committee investigating the Russian hacking scandal. There will also be two confirmation hearings, Jerome Powell as head of the Federal Reserve Bank and the more controversial appointment of Alex Azar as Secretary for Health and Human Resources. Copernicus 1, a European space agency satellite, on Friday starts reporting back on the impact of climate change on air pollution. On the same day, it is World AIDS Day. And that was next week's News Today, so that you can plan to participate in the world around you. Stay tuned for Viewpoints Around the World with myself and Lockwood Phillips.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. He's joining us from London, and this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate both his sleep schedule, but also our schedule for the holidays, the Thanksgiving holidays, which we are going to enjoy here at the Talk Station. And of course, Tom has informed us that he will be enjoying Thanksgiving, but not until late, early December, because he has family traveling. But Tom, I do want to hear, after it's over, how your guests enjoy this year's event, your feast at your home. But let's move on to other items here for a moment. Let's talk about Well, particularly the issue of Brexit. And I've noticed with interest recently that several headquarters are looking to relocate from London. In fact, you had predicted this in your capacity with Looking Ahead, with Look Ahead Radio and lookaheadnews.com. You had predicted this. So what is the feeling, the sense there in the United Kingdom, and what is the future, again, of Brexit? A lot of things are happening.
Well, you know, a lot of people are concerned that not enough consideration was given to the long-term effects of Brexit. Now, when you have something like European Banking Authority, it only employs 170 people, but it has a big impact on a big industry, and it pays dividends if you have it based in your own country. And it helps to establish London as the world's premier financial center. When it leaves and goes to Paris, that is going to be a blow to London's position as a financial center. The European Medical Agency, the same thing. It employs nearly 1,000 people. But again, it's not the fact that it employs so many people. It's the fact that the European medical business looks towards London or people in London for guidance, and they will not be doing so any longer. You know, there are these side effects which you're going to be losing. This has been a pretty big week for Brexit. It looks as if the UK is going to double its divorce payment bill, or offer to almost double it. They say that they won't do as much as double it, but at the moment they've been offering $25 billion as a divorce payment to the EU, and they've acknowledged that that's not enough and they have to pay more, but they haven't said how much more.
Now,
the other two big issues...
Let me interrupt here very quickly. What is this payment for?
Well, it's for a lot of things, but mainly things that the EU decided to do before Britain decided to leave it. So you've got a situation where Britain makes up about 10% of the EU budget, and there are various projects that they committed to, say, 2 years ago, which are either still in progress or yet to get off the starting blocks. And all these were based on 10% of the cost being paid by the UK. So that's part of it. The other is the pension payments.
Okay.
For European Commission workers. Again, Britain was committed to paying 10% of those pensions.
Okay. All right. That better explains that. All right. I interrupted your other conversation, but I had to catch on with that one. Go ahead.
Well, basically, it's been a big week because, one, this business about the divorce money being paid. On the 14th, 15th of December, it's going to be a second attempt by the European heads of government to resolve three big issues. One is the divorce bill. The other is the issue of EU nationals in the UK and British nationals in Europe. And related to that is the role of the European Court of Justice in British legal life. And the third is, and this is proving to be possibly the most intractable of the lot, is the issue of the border between Northern Ireland and Ireland.
Now, how is that part of Brexit?
Well, it's a huge part of Brexit because when Britain leaves, there's going to have to be some sort of customs checks at the border. There are no customs checks at the border. It's a completely free trade area. And that won't be too bad. They'll be able to sort something out across the channel. But between Northern Ireland and Ireland, you have a border which has basically been turned into a soft border, not only by membership of the EU, but by the Good Friday Agreement, which played a big role in stopping the troubles in Ireland.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Nobody wants to return to what they call a hard border because they fear it would stoke up the sectarian troubles there again. Now, if they don't set up a hard border, though, then you're going to have a situation where people can effectively or de facto wise smuggle products in and out of the UK across the border between Ireland and Northern Ireland.
So
and so any customs regulations you have across the channel would disappear, because you can't have customs regulations between Northern Ireland and the UK,
right?
Because Northern Ireland is part of the UK.
And the other aspect of this is also Scotland. Scotland, of course, has not been interested in becoming separated from the European Union.
Scotland doesn't have the troubles that Northern Ireland does, and it doesn't have a border. Mm. It doesn't have a land border with an EU member. Ireland's trade, you also have to remember, I think more than 50% of their trade is with the UK.
Mm-hmm.
So this would have a major impact on the Irish economy.
Now, I know that this has been a topic recently that Parliament has been discussing, the issue of establishing a hard or a soft Brexit. What are we looking at very quickly, Tom? A hard Brexit? We
don't know.
Okay.
We don't know.
All right.
It changes from day to day.
All right.
You know,
one of the things that I want to chat about here is also, and you've made a note on this, Britain would be losing its seat on the International Court of Justice. Does that play a role in this?
Yes, definitely. Britain has been a member, or has had a judge, a jurist, mm-hmm. on the International Court of Justice, along with all the other permanent members of the Security Council, including the U.S., ever since it was founded in, I think, 1946. And the reason is because of Britain's standing in the world. Well, Britain's standing in the world has dropped. And one of the reasons Britain's standing in the world has dropped is because of Brexit.
Okay. So
so this is another side effect.
Well, and also, the court will be making a lot of decisions that involve both transactions, things of this nature, and, for example, copyright laws, things of this nature. Does this pose a problem for Britain?
Yes, of course it does.
Okay. So this...
Yes, no. It's. I should add, it's not just Brexit. There has been... this is also a sign of the times internationally, globally.
Mm-hmm.
The rise of the developing world, shall we say, especially countries like India and China. China, of course, does already have a member on, because it is also a permanent member of the Security Council. India is taking Britain's seat on the International Court of Justice. And India is now a big economy.
Right.
You know, it's a growing country. And you have other developing countries who are coming up, and they're wanting to have more of a say in how the world is run. This is one of the first and early moves towards that.
All right.
You're going to find it elsewhere. Britain was, I suppose, a little bit easier to pick off on this occasion
mm-hmm.
because it's so soon after Brexit.
All right. I want to talk about some other changes happening in the European community in just a moment, right after this break. With Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, you're listening to Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, we were just chatting a few moments ago about the changes happening in Great Britain as a result of the United Kingdom, as a result of Brexit, British exit from the European Union. But there are other things happening, and I want to move on to Germany and France, to Central Europe here. First, I see a note here. I just want to go to this very quickly. German businessmen are organizing to let Britain stay to rejoin the European Union. What is going there?
Yes. Yes, there's a big industrial unit or industrial trade association, which is actually saying, you know, we want to cut Britain an easier deal. In fact, what we really want is for Britain to stay in the EU.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps we could renegotiate things, especially on the immigration issue, to make it easier for them to stay in. Now, why is this? Well, there are two reasons. One is Britain is a big market for Germany,
mm-hmm.
Especially for the German car industry. But it's a big market for the German car industry in several ways. One is for the finished product, but also for the various parts that go into making the cars. As you probably know, these days, the brakes will be made in Italy, the windscreen wipers will be made in Denmark, and so forth and so on. Britain has always had a very extensive history of producing cars, and it produces a lot of the parts for the German cars.
Is there also an understanding, though, that Great Britain is, if you will, an entry point into other English-speaking countries, particularly, of course, the United States, and you've also got Canada, Australia. Is there a sense that Great Britain is a conduit?
That's true as well. There's also a sense, what the German businessmen say, is that Britain introduces an element of competitiveness into the EU. That France in particular, and to a lesser degree Germany, they're more state-oriented, state controls. Whereas Britain is very keen to keep an element of free market competitiveness, which they think balances very well against the statism of Germany and France. And they're concerned that that Germany in particular will become less competitive.
Let's talk about
markets.
Let's talk about Germany here for a moment. I know that Chancellor Angela Merkel has having difficulty creating a coalition government, and it seems part of the reasons is the, at least from the media that I've been covering, reading, much of it having to do with predominantly the immigrants and the asylum seekers in Germany. What's the future for Angela Merkel? She's been the leader of the European Union, so what's happening there?
Well, they are talking about possibility she may resign.
If that happens...
That's not clear yet.
If that were to happen, what does that do to Theresa May?
Probably it doesn't help Theresa May. The British look towards Germany to cutting them the best deal on Brexit. So all of the turmoil in Germany is holding up the British chances of getting a better deal on Brexit, is generally how it's viewed. I don't think Angela Merkel will resign, simply because there is nobody in her Christian Democratic Union Party coming up behind her. They haven't prepared for her departure.
Well, but still, they've got to have a coalition in order to accomplish some activities. And there are several other aspects.
And this is a problem that you see in the headlines. The headlines have all been saying that this is the biggest political crisis that Germany has faced since 1949.
The other interesting aspect of this, and I want to go to, you've got a note here, failure of coalition talks. And of course, this is the, if I am understanding that correctly, this is what we're speaking about. But I also made note of the fact that several members, several parties are looking to try to facilitate the entry of Turkey into the European Union. And, you know, that's one of those, you know, if you will, to pardon the pun, Trump card in getting the European Union.
Well, you got on to me last week for saying that.
But it is. This is an interesting challenge.
I'm not familiar with the with that.
Okay.
Britain had been playing a big role in pushing for Turkey. I think Turkey is a non-starter at the moment.
Okay.
Simply because there's something called the Copenhagen Agreement, which says that they have to abide by certain democratic rules. Mm-hmm. At the moment, Turkey is a long way from abiding by those democratic rules.
As we've seen in the past, and we'll get into that in relationship to China as well. I want to continue on the European Union for a few more moments. President Tusk, former Polish prime minister, is fighting with the Polish government related to the European Union?
Well, yep, absolutely. Wow. It goes back to the fact that the party that's in government at the moment, which is a right-wing party, right-wing populist party, was in opposition to Tusk when Tusk was the prime minister of Poland. And he is from a left-of-center party. Mm-hmm. And so there's never been any love lost between Tusk's party and the party which is currently in power in Poland. And in fact, when Tusk came up for re-election recently, the only government which voted against his being re-elected president of the EU or European Commission was Poland.
Really?
Okay. Now, on top of that, the Polish government is doing a lot of what might be regarded and is regarded by the European Parliament as undemocratic things, such as packing the judiciary with political appointments, mm-hmm. closing down newspapers that don't agree with them, refusing to take any refugees. Mm-hmm. Now, all this is, I mentioned before, this Copenhagen Agreement. This is in breach of the Copenhagen Agreement, which they had to agree to before they became members of the EU. And they have to abide by them if they want to continue to be members of the EU. If they don't, the EU can vote to suspend any aid, any payments, even voting rights to Poland.
You know, if this,
and that is what they're threatening to do.
Well, it also begs the issue, and we won't have time to discuss this because we've got to move on to other items, but with the absence of Great Britain and the possible divisions within the European Union, one has to wonder how concise the influence and impact this could have. In fact, for example, Poland were to exit the European Union and conduct business with, well, another absent member, or divorced member now, United Kingdom. I want to move on to a few other items before we go to the next break, Tom. And again, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. This portion has been pre-recorded. Let's talk first about the Mideast. Lebanon, warning of possible conflict with Israel. Question for you on that one. Of course, this is a concern to the European community as much as it is to the rest of the world. What's the situation here with Lebanon?
It's not clear yet what the Lebanese Prime Minister Saad Hariri is going to do. He was summoned to Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. Now, there is a coalition government in Lebanon, and there has been since the beginning of November, which includes Hezbollah. Hezbollah, as you know, is an extension of Iran. It's basically controlled by Iran. It was thought that the coalition government, the inclusion of Hezbollah in the coalition government, was basically going to guarantee a route for Iran all the way from Tehran, from the Persian Gulf, through Iraq, which is now fairly well allied with Iran, through Syria, mm-hmm. who is relying on Iranian and Hezbollah foot soldiers to keep Assad in power, and then into Lebanon, where they're in a coalition government, all the way to the Mediterranean coast, which would substantially increase Iran's power in the Middle East. And Iran also is the, of course, biggest enemy at the moment of Israel. So right. It put Hezbollah and Iranian troops right on the northern border of Israel.
Is there a concern?
The Saudis.
Is there a concern that this is framing up as a yet another Middle East crisis?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And the Saudis are taking the lead in trying to prevent the extension of Iranian power. There's effectively a cold war threatening to heat up between Iran and Saudi Arabia. They more or less summoned the Lebanese prime minister to Saudi Arabia and told him, you got to do something about this. And this is where we get into this business of, did the Saudis force him to resign? Things like that. Well, that's not clear yet.
All right. So
now,
very quickly,
the Israelis are watching this very carefully, and they have been holding some exercises on their border with Lebanon. And the chief of the Lebanese army recently said, look out.
Right.
With all these political changes involving Hezbollah, the Israelis, we think, could very well move first and try and wipe out Hezbollah's influence in Lebanon.
We will be watching
this. They haven't had a war there since 2006.
Well, we will be watching this with a great deal of interest, obviously, because of our previous experience. We've only got about 2 minutes to go, and I want to get to Zimbabwe very quickly with you, Tom. A lot happening in Zimbabwe. President, or is he, is he practically a dictator, is refusing to leave. What's the future?
He's been booted out.
Well, yes, but
he has resigned.
He has? Okay.
He has resigned as of an hour or two ago.
Okay, so what does this mean for Zimbabwe?
Well, I don't think it's going to be any better. If anything, it's going to be worse.
Okay, and what does this mean for Africa?
Pardon?
What is the prediction for Africa? Is there any way that the countries in Africa can come together? Some similar situation as a European Union to have
they do have the African Unity,
but
the AU. But let's focus on Zimbabwe for a moment, because here you have a situation. I mean, it's a classic case of once you have a dictatorship,
mm-hmm.
it just sort of tends to lead from dictatorship to coup to dictatorship to coup. And it's a constant downward spiral. It's very difficult to break. And the person who is most likely to succeed Mugabe is a man called Emmerson Mnangagwa.
Mm.
And Emmerson was vice president until he's gotten a row with Grace Mugabe, who wanted to be president. Emmerson was planning to succeed Robert. And then Grace had him removed from power, and he had to flee the country for his life. But Emmerson's past should give you an idea of what sort of president he might be. Even his nickname, he's called the Crocodile.
Hmm.
His party is called Lacoste. You know, like Lacoste shirts
right.
with the crocodile
yes,
symbol.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. He started off as Mugabe's bodyguard. He then became leader of the notorious 5th Brigade and then the head of intelligence. The 5th Brigade was trained by the North Koreans. And in the 80s, they were responsible for the murder of tens of thousands in a genocidal war. And Emmerson is reported to have forced the victims to dance over the bodies of corpses, singing praises of Robert Mugabe before murdering them. So that's the man who's likely to replace Mugabe.
That's the reason why we enjoy the conversations, sadly, with our guest this afternoon, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio. What we're hearing from him is something to look ahead for in Africa. We're going to get back to wrapping things up here with Tom in just a moment here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. The Cold War conflict between Iran and Saudi Arabia is simmering quite nicely, and like most Middle East problems, threatening to boil over. The roots, the causes, the issues, and the problems are all part of that complex Middle East tapestry which closely resembles Churchill's riddle wrapped in an enigma and constantly shrouded in the shifting sands of Arabia. But I will attempt to provide a guide on today's state of play. The Sunnis hate the Shias. The problem is a dispute over the religious line of succession. Iran is the dominant Shia power. Saudi Arabia is the dominant Sunni power. Almost all the other countries line up behind either Iran or Saudi Arabia, although some try to take a middle route. However, this is becoming increasingly difficult as tensions rise. The latest problem started with the overthrow of the Shah of Iran in 1979 and his replacement by a Shiite theocracy. Another exacerbating factor was the demise of Iraq's secular, but still Sunni, leader Saddam Hussein, who has been replaced by a pro-Iranian Shia leadership in Iraq. So, Iraq shifted from support of Saudi Arabia to closer ties with Iran. The balance of power shifted accordingly. Syria is an extension of the Iran-Saudi conflict. Iran supports President Assad. Saudi Arabia supports the rebels. Iran is also the main backer of Hezbollah, which is on America's terrorist hate list. Iran and Hezbollah have become Israel's biggest headache. The Arab-Israeli conflict is at the bottom of most of the Middle East crises, but at the moment it could almost be described as an Israeli-Iranian conflict, as Tehran is currently taking the hardest line against the Jewish homeland. Hezbollah is part of a complex coalition government in Lebanon. Prime Minister Saad Hariri was coerced by the Saudis to boot Hezbollah out of the government. This causes problems in Lebanon. Lebanon is a highly unstable melting pot of competing religions and cultures. Israel is on the Saudi side because of the old axiom, "The enemy of my enemy is my friend." However, neither Israel nor Saudi Arabia can publicly cooperate because Israel's pariah status would damage Saudi Arabia's reputation with other Arab states. But don't forget that Israel is the only nuclear weapon state in the region, at the moment. Poverty mixed with tribal conflicts makes Yemen another long-standing political hotbed and headache. Those problems erupted into a bloody civil war 2 years ago. Iran and Saudi Arabia back rival factions. At the moment, Saudi Arabia is not being helped by its royal leader, 32-year-old Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. He recently staged a counter-coup before a coup could be launched against him. Entrenched religious leaders and corrupt royal family members oppose the Crown Prince, who's attempting to inch Saudi Arabia into the modern world. The United Arab Emirates are firmly in the Saudi camp. Bahrain is a bit of a problem because it has a Sunni ruler and predominantly Shiite population. Qatar is a Sunni rebel. It finances and hosts Al Jazeera, which is the only thing approaching a free media operation in the Arab world. Al Jazeera is one of the main reasons for the Saudi-led blockade of Qatar. And then there's also Qatar's close relationship with Islamic fundamentalists and closer-than-desired ties with Iran. Egypt, Jordan, and Kuwait are peripheral Saudi supporters, but they are supporting the Saudis in Yemen. Finally, there are the big outside powers. Donald Trump hates Iran almost as much as the Saudis. His second trip abroad was to Riyadh, where he announced a $110 billion arms deal. He has also withdrawn from the Iran nuclear deal. China takes a standoff position. Russia is forging good relations with both countries, and Vladimir Putin has offered to mediate in their dispute. Turkey's President Erdogan has also offered himself as an honest broker. The Europeans lean heavily towards the Saudis. France and Britain, along with the US, are providing intelligence and logistical support to the Saudi forces fighting in Yemen. The French and the British also do very well out of the arms sales to Riyadh, each about $4 billion in 2016. And that is the current lineup, which could change tomorrow or the day after.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We have just a few minutes left with him, and of course we always look forward to this last segment because there's always something, well, a little bit of a twist in the story. But before we get to that, I do have to bring up, and since we will be in the same region of the world, I want to talk to you first about the jailing of a human rights lawyer in China. And we've heard recently of other efforts by the Prime Minister, the Premier of China, if I'm not mistaken, the President of China, I'm sorry, to consolidate his power. The jailing of human rights lawyer in China. Interesting story. I think I know about this. Tell us about it, Tom.
Well, I picked this one out because a few weeks ago, you know, I reported that Xi Jinping was going to be a much more powerful man after packing the party's Congress and Politburo. Mm-hmm. And you said, well, what effect is this going to have? Well, now we're beginning to see the effects. There's this man called Jiang Tianyong, and Jiang Tianyong was possibly the most prominent human rights lawyer in China. Now, when you get really prominent in these authoritarian regimes, they don't dare lock you up because you've got international support. It could have effect on trade and all sorts of things. It could have effect domestically and so forth. Well, Xi Jinping now has enough power that he can do almost anything he wants. And Jiang Tianyong has been locked up for 2 years. He was basically charged with saying nasty things about the government. That was it.
Right. And of course,
I mean, that was his crime.
And it sounds like they've also, as I understand, have they've used this as an example for other lawyers and other organizations that are simply trying to provide service to the populace to be, well, shall we say, more careful.
Dissenters.
Yeah, dissenters, yes. So this obviously is something that's not going to fly well with the world community. What's the upshot? Is there going to be any reaction?
Well, Xi Jinping is so powerful now, has such a stranglehold on domestic power, that he can afford to stick up his finger.
Right. Huh. Okay. Tom Arms of lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio being rather graphic there. All right, Tom, since we're in that sector of the world, let's talk about this last item. Virtual reality graves in Hong Kong?
Yes. You've got 7.5 million people living in Hong Kong, mm-hmm. and not a great deal of space. But as you know, the Chinese are very keen on ancestor worship. They really like to venerate their ancestors. And so they will spend up to $150,000 for a grave.
Wow.
In a very crowded place.
Uh-huh.
The Chinese government, of course, and Hong Kong government are encouraging people to carry out cremations. But it doesn't go over well with Chinese culture. They like to have a grave which has the person's name on it. Mm-hmm. So someone has come up with the rather clever idea, one entrepreneur, of virtual graves. And basically, your loved one is cremated, but his grave is created on a computer, and you can go visit it by putting on the virtual reality headset. And you can see it in a much nicer setting than it would be otherwise, under a spreading chestnut tree or something, and with his name and picture on the headstone, and you can visit in virtual reality.
Do we have a cost for this by any chance?
Yes, it's about $2,000 as opposed to $150,000.
$2,000.
It's going to be launched in the new year. In the pre-launch period, he sold 300 of them. Who knows what he'll sell once he launches it?
I'm wondering, is there a possibility for a franchise opportunity here? I can see other countries having a similar situation.
I will try and get his name for you. You can have a chat with him.
I would love to do that. A virtual reality? That's interesting. Virtual reality grave sites. And starting yep. there in Hong Kong. Ah, all right. Tom Arms of lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio. As we prepare to celebrate Thanksgiving, we just want to wish you, Tom, and your lovely wife, Eileen, a very happy Thanksgiving, though they're in the United Kingdom rather than here in the States. And we look forward to hearing the results of your feast in early December when you are able to gather all your friends and family together. As always, Tom.
Thank you, Lockwood. And a happy Thanksgiving to everyone there at WTKF and WJNC and all the other stations which are listening to this.
Outstanding. Thank you, Tom, as always. Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.